Welcome on the show, Raina.
Good morning.
Wow, it's some title you've got there. It's about as long as my suburb. Now, I just suppose I find that statistic incredible. 4.1 million Australians are not vaccinated. Is unifying how different states and territories kind of access or handle access to childcare needed to boost vaccination rates, though?
So two issues there. One is the rate of unvaccinated adults, and that's across the board around the country, despite the fact that the government offers free vaccination for everyone 65 years and over. And if you're under 65 with particular medical indications, like if you've got heart disease or lung disease and so on. So we're not really doing as well with the adult-funded vaccines compared to the childhood vaccines. So the childhood vaccination rates are in excess of 93% Australia-wide for the vaccines that are provided free. And these measures like no jab, no pay, and the new one that's been flagged, no jab, no play, are aimed at increasing that vaccination rate in the infants and kids to higher than 93%. And it's, you know, a lot of families depend on those payments and they depend on their childcare places. So it's a controversial measure.
Yes, sir. Now that may be the case. There's no doubt that working families may need those rebates. But a lot of people also argue that the health of, you know, infants is absolutely crucial, especially at such a young age when diseases can have such an impact on them. Is it fair to assume that the no jab no pay policy is one that is kind of, while it does have some kind of harsh implications in terms of people's access to childcare rebates and things like that, it's also about protecting the welfare of children?
Sure, but when we look at the outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases, such as measles, for example, you know, we've published a study looking at all the measles notifications in New South Wales and Victoria over a 12-month period, and yes, you do get children of vaccine objectors who get measles, but the majority of measles cases are actually not even in that age group. They're older children, adolescents and adults. So in terms of controlling measles, you're going to get better value by targeting the under-vaccinated older groups because they form, you know, a larger proportion of the cases of measles. And I guess, you know, vaccination programs in general, you're vaccinating healthy people, whether they're infants or adults, and to prevent them against something they may or may not get in the future. And so public trust is really important. And, you know, no vaccine is 100% safe or 100% effective. And occasionally, very occasionally, things don't go to plan. So in the past, there have been vaccines that, not in Australia, but in the US, the first rotavirus vaccine, for example, was shown to be unsafe and it wasn't picked up in the initial studies done on the vaccine and that vaccine was withdrawn. So when you have coercive policies and if something does goes wrong, you undermine the public trust in vaccination programs, and that can have a lot of damage.
Of course, I accept that you might that there needs to be caution exercised. I just think a lot of people would also argue, though, that to say that there's a lack of public trust in vaccinations. I mean, we don't really have a cause for that in Australia, do we? Surely, I mean,
an anti-vaccination lobby everywhere. Okay, they're everywhere, and they're very vocal and they're very persuasive. There's a larger group of parents that aren't completely anti-vaccination but have some doubts. And, you know, the anti-vaccination lobby plays on those hesitant parents and, you know, there's a risk when you become coercive that you can push those hesitant parents towards becoming complete vaccine objectors instead of in the direction you want them to go. And, you know, you look at countries like Canada, for example, they don't have any legislation and they get really high vaccination rates without punitive measures. The US as well doesn't go quite as far. A couple of states they do, but they get reasonable vaccination rates as well. So there's examples around the world in how you can improve vaccination rates with more collaborative approaches So it's not the only way that vaccination rates can be increased.
Of course. I suppose it might be the Australian government and the public's view that it's better to take no chances, though, in terms of saying that we have to have such strong measures because this is such a serious issue. And while vaccination rates might be high for young people and the large degree of people that aren't vaccinated, maybe adults, surely they're kind of different issues that you can't conflate, though, aren't they?
No, the objective of any vaccination program is to control infectious diseases. So what hasn't happened actually is a really clear evidence-based problem statement where we look at the data, look at the diseases, look at where the outbreaks are happening, and then do an analysis of where the vaccination needs are. With whooping cough, for example, you know, that kills infants who are unvaccinated, but it can also kill older people. The biggest burden of whooping cough is actually in adults. So there's, you know, maybe we should be asking the question, do we need, older adults vaccination dose for whooping cough? That's kind of more evidence-based approach to actually start with the problem, which is the disease control, look at where the solutions are needed, and then work backwards that way.
But you do acknowledge that there are children that are at risk of these diseases, and if they're not vaccinated against, obviously they're more susceptible to them. I personally know a pharmacist who actually had the unfortunate reality of a child who had died from not being vaccinated against whooping cough. So I think a lot of people will be thinking that yes, absolutely, adults need to be vaccinated, and there needs to be targeted efforts towards it, but hey, it's, you know, children's immune systems are surely more susceptible to these diseases at a young age, and that's why it's important to have them.
Yes, they are. Yes, children and the very, very elderly have very susceptible immune systems and need to be protected. But to achieve that protection, you need to actually understand where's the disease happening, how do we best target it. And the example I gave with measles, for example, there's a lot of attention needed towards controlling measles in older age groups, which hasn't really occurred in the same way. So all I'm saying is that all measures to increase vaccination rates will work. And if you bring in a coercive measure, yes, it'll work. You know, people can't afford to live without their childcare payments and their tax benefits, etc. So they will go and vaccinate if they had delayed it or were hesitant or whatever. The other point I made is that, you know, there are other ways to raise vaccination rates without necessarily being coercive, and also coercion raises a question about informed consent. Vaccination is a medical procedure, and if there's any feeling of coercion in the parent, then actually it's a breach of informed consent, and that's a medical ethical issue. So I think it's a very complex, it's not just that straightforward as in, you know, hold them down and jab them and how dare they refuse. It's just not that straightforward. I think it's much more nuanced.
No, of course not, but it is surely about, I think what the government intends to, and the reason it's probably received bipartisan support, is that a lot of society would recognise that it's important to, you know, have people protected against these diseases. I mean, people aren't necessarily...
Yeah, and that's really great. It's really great that people are unified in this desire to protect people from diseases. All I'm saying is that we need to actually understand where's the burden of disease and how do we best stop the transmission of the disease.
Thank you very much for joining the program, Raina.
It's a pleasure.